Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take your sources, articles, research, our own notes, and we dig in to find the most important nuggets of knowledge, the key insights. Today, we're plunging into something really interesting, corporate transformation. Specifically, what does it actually take for a big company to totally reshape itself, to pivot its strategy and really go after completely new opportunities? And our case study for this is Carlyle Companies Incorporated. You might know them, ticker symbol CSL. So our mission here is pretty comprehensive. We want to take a really close look at how Carlyle, which used to be the sprawling industrial giant, how they meticulously turn themselves into this highly focused leader, specifically in building products. You've given us some great source material, a really detailed investment analysis, their recent earnings reports, some industry deep dives. And our goal is to pull out what really matters. We want to understand the strategy behind this huge pivot, look at where they stand now in the market, and ultimately figure out what it all means for their future. This isn't just a history lesson, folks. It's kind of a blueprint for strategic change.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's really fascinating here, I think, is that this wasn't just some minor tweak to their business model. No, this was a fundamental reorientation. It completely clarified their mission, concentrated their considerable resources. Carlyle today is really a premier manufacturer. They're dominant, especially in the North American commercial roofing and building envelope markets. So throughout this deep dive, we'll be dissecting their core strengths. That means, their strong market position, that unique resilience they get from their roofing cycles, which is huge. Also their financials, which are genuinely best in class, their shareholder-friendly capital allocation, always important, and how well they're aligned with these big mega trends like energy efficiency and labor-saving products in construction.
Okay, so for you, the listener, here's the plan. We're going to walk you through Carlyle's whole journey. We'll start with what the company looked like before, a really stark contrast to today. Then we'll shift to its present core businesses. We'll look at how it competes, what makes it unique, its moat, as we call it. After that, we'll dig into its financial health, its capital management, which is pretty impressive, explore their future growth vision, which is ambitious, and of course, we have to look honestly at the risks they face. Consider this your shortcut, your fast track to being really well informed on a fascinating story of corporate evolution. Okay, let's unpack this. So part one, unpacking a major transformation from conglomerate to pure play powerhouse. To really get the scale of Carlyle's change, we have to look at the before picture. It provides such a sharp contrast. So imagine this. Back in 2006, Carlyle was pretty much the definition of a diversified industrial holding company, spread across loads of seemingly unrelated sectors. Less than half its revenue, only about 43%, came from what they then called construction materials. Think about that. The rest. Well, segments like tire and wheel products, totally different, right? Food service products, even power transmission. It was a real mix. Now, jump forward a decade to 2016. Things had narrowed a bit. Construction materials and interconnect technologies were the main chunks, but it was still very much a multi-industry company. It's hard to overstate how different those businesses were. What does that initial broad diversification tell us about who they were back then?
That's a great place to start because, it really highlights how much things have changed. 2006, Carlyle was basically a collection of manufacturing assets. Diversification back then was often seen as, a way to smooth out economic cycles. You have exposure to lots of different end markets, right? But this pivot, this change, wasn't accidental. That's the really fascinating part. It was very deliberate, a strategic choice by management. They recognized pretty early on, actually, the superior profitability and the much higher return profile of their building products business. They saw the numbers. They could see, that this specific segment was consistently outperforming the others. Better margins, better use of capital. And this realization ultimately led to their big plan, Vision 2030, which explicitly set out this really audacious goal, become a pure play building products company. The rationale, it was complex. It went beyond just, shareholder value in generic terms. It was about unlocking specific value by concentrating their money and their brain power on the businesses that delivered the best results. Highest margins, highest returns.
And this intense focus allowed them to do something really powerful. It let them leverage some really strong secular growth trends. We're talking specifically about, first, the growing demand, regulatory, and consumer for energy-efficient buildings. That's a huge global push, right? Climate change, rising energy costs, and second, crucially, developing labor-saving solutions. Because the construction industry has this structural shortage of skilled workers. So the key insight here, I think, is how they consciously chose focus. Deep specialization over that traditional safety net of, broad diversification. It was a bold move. Many companies talk about it, but few actually execute it so decisively.
And it wasn't just a plan on paper, right? This strategy was executed through some really significant, bold actions. We're talking major divestitures, selling off whole divisions. Think about it. They sold Carlyle Fluid Technology, CFT. And then, more recently, that huge $2 billion sale of Carlyle Interconnect Technologies, CIT, just finished in 2024. These weren't just about tidying up. These deals generated enormous amounts of cash. But here's where it gets really insightful for me. A huge chunk of that cash wasn't just parked. It was aggressively returned to shareholders, share repurchases specifically,
Right. Directly
boosting per share value. That tells you something about management's thinking, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
The end result of all this, a company that's now much more focused, financially stronger, and, you know, strategically makes more sense. Today, get this, 83% of Carlyle's revenue comes from building products. That's a massive shift. What does that aggressive buyback signal?
It signals a few really important things. All positive, I'd say. First, huge confidence in the remaining core business, the building products part. When a company uses sale proceeds to buy its own stock back, it's basically shouting, we think our stock is cheap and this is the absolute best way to use this cash to create value for you, our owners. Second, it shows discipline in capital allocation. They didn't just hoard the cash right or immediately rush out and buy something else big and different. They stuck to their pure play vision. And third, it's making a clear statement to the market. Look, we're not a conglomerate anymore. We're a specialized, high-margin, high-return building products company, and we expect you to value us that way. That aggressive buyback, it almost forces a re-rating of the stock. It's a really powerful financial move.
Okay, so part two, the new Carlyle, a deep dive into its core business segments. Now we get the transformation story. Let's really explore the core of this new Carlyle. At its heart is Carlyle Construction Materials, or CCM. This is undeniably the main engine, the primary value driver. It's the core of their commercial roofing and insulation business. Just to give you a sense of scale, Q1 2025, CCM alone brought in $799 million in revenue. That's roughly 73% of the company's total sales. Huge. Their product lineup within CCM is really comprehensive, mostly centered on these high-performance single-ply roofing systems. This includes TPO thermoplastic polyolefin, which is a market leader known for energy efficiency, durability, but they also do EPDM and PVC roofing systems. And it's not just the membranes. They supply critical stuff for energy-efficient buildings, polyiso insulation, expanded polystyrene panels, architectural metals, all sorts of roofing accessories. They really cover that whole commercial roof setup.
Right. And despite a modest organic revenue dip, 1% in Q1 2025, and then about 0.6% in Q2, which, you know, was mostly due to softer end markets and some tough comparisons to the year before. Despite that, CCM's profitability is exceptionally strong. It's actually quite remarkable. Their adjusted EBITDA margins were a very healthy 27.1% in Q1. And then, get this, they expanded even further to an impressive 31.6% in Q2. To put that in context, those are best-in-class numbers in the building products world. It's a clear sign of incredible pricing power and just really strong operational efficiency. You don't see margins like that everywhere. Connecting this to the bigger picture, it just shows profound stability, real resilience in their core business, even when the overall market's a bit soft. They're not just holding steady, they're actually expanding already high margins. That says a lot.
Okay, so let's shift to the other key piece. Carlyle Weatherproofing Technologies, or CWT. This segment made up the other 27% of revenue in Q1 2025. CWT offers a whole suite of products that protect the entire building envelope from moisture, from air getting in. Think about everything that keeps a building sealed and dry. They do waterproofing membranes for below-grade stuff, foundations, basements, air and vapor barriers, spray, polyurethane, foam insulation, SPF, and various coatings, sealants, used in both commercial and residential construction. So if CCM is the roof, CWT is kind of everything else keeping the weather out. How does this segment compare performance-wise, and what does it tell us about Carlyle's overall market exposure now?
Yeah, CWT's recent performance is quite revealing, actually. It highlights the company's remaining cyclical exposure, specifically to residential and new construction markets. In Q1 2025, CWT revenues were down 5% year-over-year, and the organic decline, which strips out acquisitions, was even sharper at 12%. And that pressure continued into Q2, unfortunately. A 2% reported revenue decline, but a 10% organic decline, directly linked to ongoing softness in its end markets, particularly new residential building. Naturally, lower volumes hit profitability too. Adjusted EBITDA margins were 15.6% in Q1. That improved a bit to 19.9% in Q2. Now look, those are still healthy margins by many standards, but they are noticeably significantly below what we just saw in the core CCM segment. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, This split performance really illustrates the new Carlyle perfectly. You've got this incredibly strong, resilient, highly profitable core in CCM, and alongside it, you have CWT, which, while important, is definitely more exposed to those cyclical headwinds in new construction. It raises a key question for you to think about. How do you weigh this concentrated risk? Now that Carlyle is so focused on North American building products, does that cyclical bit in CWT worry you? Or do the massive strengths of CCM just outweigh it? It's a judgment call.
Part 3. Industry dynamics and Carlyle's position. The North American commercial roofing landscape. Let's zoom out now. Look at the bigger market Carlyle plays in. The global commercial roofing market, valued around $45 billion, maybe a bit more, in 2023. And it's forecast to grow pretty healthily, about 6.7% CAGR compound annual growth rate, hitting maybe $81 billion by 2032. So decent growth. The U.S. is obviously a massive chunk of this, projected to go from roughly $25 billion in 2025 to over $33 billion by 2030. That's a CAGR of about 6.2%. Solid. But here's where it gets really interesting and frankly kind of unique about this market. The biggest driver isn't new buildings. It's the re-roofing cycle. Commercial roofs, they last about 20 years, give or take. After that, replacing them, it's not optional. It's a necessity. You have to protect the building, the assets inside. This re-roofing accounts for a huge slice of the market activity. Estimates vary, but somewhere between 70%, maybe even up to 94% by some towns. What that means is it creates this remarkably resilient, predictable revenue base for companies like Carlyle. It's much less tied to the economic ups and downs than new construction is. And on top of that, you've got these powerful secular trends pushing things along. Stricter building codes, corporate sustainability goals, driving demand for energy-efficient systems like those cool roofs that reflect sunlight. Plus, sadly, rising extreme weather events are pushing for tougher, more durable materials. So it's a market with this built-in demand plus these strong tailwinds.
Absolutely. And within this big market, single-ply membranes have really taken over for low-slope commercial roofs. I'm talking TPO, EPDM, PVC. They're now used by over 80% of roofing contractors. It's the standard. And among those, TPO, that thermoclastic polyolefin, has really emerged as the clear leader. It's valued for that great combination: energy efficiency, durability, cost effectiveness. It has something like a 37.7% share of the commercial single-ply market just in 2024. That's huge. And this dominance aligns almost perfectly with Carlyle's core strengths, their main products. It gives them a massive advantage in the biggest, fastest growing part of a whole market. They're positioned right where the action is.
Okay, so Carlyle is a leader. But the overall U.S. roofing market at the contractor level, it's actually pretty fragmented. Get this. The top five roofing contractors are estimated to hold only maybe 5% to 10% of the total market, which interestingly is actually fueling consolidation among the contractors themselves who are trying to scale up. But Carlyle, among the big manufacturers, a clear leader. Their main competitors are serious players. You've got GAF, often considered the biggest roofing manufacturer in North America. Huge presence, broad product line. Owens Corning, another major public competitor, big in roofing, insulation, composites, kind of a bellwether for building materials. And then there's Holcim, the global building materials giant. They've become a really formidable force through acquisitions. They bought Firestone Building Products. That was a big deal in roofing. And more recently, they snapped up Duralast for like $1.3 billion in 2023. That massively scaled up their presence in North America, makes them a very strong competitor.
Yeah, Holcim's moves have really shaken things up.
Exactly. And beyond those direct rivals, you've got other public companies like Masco, Fortune Brands, Armstrong World Industries, Crane. They serve as useful valuation comparisons in the broader building product space. So it's definitely a competitive field, but Carlyle holds a strong position. What then really protects that position? What keeps those big competitors from eating their lunch?
That's the critical question, isn't it? What are the real barriers to entry here? What's Carlyle's defense? Well, look, the capital needed for a new TPO production line, it's not insignificant, maybe $60, $75 million. But for a huge company, it's not insurmountable. The real competitive hurdles are elsewhere. It's not just about building a factory. First, it's about achieving manufacturing scale. Reaching that optimal cost efficiency takes serious investment, takes time. Second, it's about establishing a trusted brand reputation that's built over decades, literally, of proven performance out in the real world. Earning the trust of architects, of building owners, that takes time. Third, and this is crucial, it's about cultivating those deep, long-standing relationships. With a nationwide network of distributors, yes, but most importantly, with the roofing contractors themselves, the guys actually installing this stuff. And finally, it's developing that specialized technical expertise, not just to offer, but to back up those long-term warranties, 20 years, sometimes more, that building owners absolutely rely on. What's really insightful here, I think, is that customer loyalty, that stickiness. It isn't primarily with the building owner who ultimately pays for the roof. It's overwhelmingly with the roofing contractor. Think about it from the contractor's perspective. They've trained their crews on Carlisle's specific insulation methods for years, maybe decades. They've got a workflow down. Their team knows the product inside out. They have a relationship with their Carlisle sales rep. Switching to another main supplier, that involves real costs. Retraining crews on new systems, learning different details, maybe buying new tools, disrupting established relationships. It's not a decision they take lightly. So Carlisle's strength isn't some secret sauce. It's this powerful combination built over decades, manufacturing scale, brand trust, and those deeply embedded channel relationships. It makes it incredibly hard for newcomers or even existing rivals to really challenge their leadership effectively. It's a classic network effect, really.
Part four, Carlisle's enduring competitive advantage, the moat. When we talk about a company's moat, that sustainable edge that protects its profits, Carlisle has built something truly impressive, very hard for others to copy. A cornerstone of their whole strategy is what they actually call the Carlisle Experience. They've been a recognized leader in commercial roofing for nearly 50 years, half a century. They've built up immense brand equity. And this isn't just fluffy marketing speak, it's brand equity tied directly to a proven track record. Quality, reliability, performance under tough conditions. And that's absolutely critical for something like a commercial roof. It's a huge long-term asset, expected to last 20 years or more, protecting potentially billions in assets underneath. Building owners, architects, they need that confidence. They need to know the roof they install today will perform decades from now. And the Carlisle Experience isn't just a slogan, it includes real things. Comprehensive technical support, dedicated design help for architects on complex projects, and importantly, industry-leading long-term warranties. That offers real peace of mind, that kind of trust. Hard-earned, incredibly valuable.
You're absolutely right. And maybe Carlisle's most defensible advantage, the deepest part of that moat, is its deep, almost symbiotic relationship with its network of authorized roofing contractors, their applicators. Carlisle gets it. They understand that a roof's long-term performance depends just as much on the installation quality as it does on the material quality itself.
Right.
Perfect material, poorly installed, useless. So to nurture and ensure that quality installation, Carlisle has built this sophisticated ecosystem. Training, support, incentive programs, really best-in-class stuff. They offer prestigious awards, like the Excellence in Single-Ply ESP Award, recognized as their top high-volume applicators, creates this kind of elite status. But even more strategically, they have the Perfection Award. This goes to the top 5% of applicators based on their warranty claim history, meaning these are the contractors doing the absolute highest quality work. Fewer problems down the road for Carlisle and for the building owner. A select few of these Perfection Award winners even get invited onto an advisory board, the Perfection Council. They give direct feedback to Carlisle on products, on market needs. This whole system, it brilliantly aligns incentives. Contractors get rewarded, recognized for flawless work. That, in turn, cuts Carlisle's warranty costs and, crucially, reinforces their brand promise of quality to the end customer. Plus, they invest heavily in training centers, making sure contractors are proficient with their specific systems. That's vital for backing up those long-term warranties that owners rely on. It's this self-reinforcing loop. Quality, trust, shared success. It's really smart.
And beyond that loyalty and training, their distribution network alone is a huge barrier for competitors. Carlisle's products, sold through this vast network built up over decades, authorized sales reps, independent distributors all across North America and Europe. Just imagine trying to replicate that established go-to-market infrastructure today. It would take years, maybe decades, massive amounts of capital. It's not just about moving boxes. It's the relationships, the trust built at every step over all that time. Plus, their sheer scale in manufacturing and procurement gives them built-in efficiencies. Hard for smaller guys to match. They can produce cheaper, buy material smarter, just because they're so big.
And while, yeah, as you mentioned, the core roofing membrane itself isn't totally immune to maybe becoming a commodity over the very long term, Carlisle consciously works to maintain a technological edge through focused R&D. Their R&D isn't just about tweaking things. It's strategically aimed at solving real critical problems for their contractor customers. A huge focus, a major value proposition, is developing products that genuinely save labor time. This is massive, given that persistent structural shortage of skilled construction workers we talked about. For instance, they have this flexible, fast adhesive. Can deliver reportedly 60% labor savings during installation. That makes Carlisle systems not just easier, but more profitable for contractors to install. Which, guess what? Reinforces their loyalty. This commitment to innovation is backed up by a pretty substantial patent portfolio. They hold almost 700 patent documents, over 150 granted patents, lots pending for new tech. In 2024, they spent $35 million on R&D. Now, okay, that might sound modest as a percentage of sales, like 0.7%. But because it's so highly targeted, focused on creating real, tangible, bottom-line value for the installer, it's incredibly effective. So this whole combination of factors, this ecosystem, creates this powerful, self-reinforcing system. It is genuinely difficult for a competitor to just replicate this whole network of trust, training, aligned incentives that Carlisle has painstakingly built over decades. This virtuous cycle, this strong partnership, that's the essence of the Carlisle moat. And it is a truly formidable barrier, real case study in building advantage beyond just the product itself.
Part V, financial performance and capital management. The numbers tell a story. Okay, let's pivot to the financials. Because at the end of the day, the numbers tell the clearest story of this whole transformation. Over the last decade, Carlisle has achieved what you can really only describe as a structurally higher level of profitability and returns on capital. That strategic pivot we've been discussing clearly unlocked significant value. For the full fiscal year 2024, Carlisle reported total revenue of $5.0 billion. That was a healthy 9.1% jump from 2023. Growth mostly driven by that strong core CCM segment revenues there climbed almost 14% to $3.7 billion. But what's even more telling about the transformation, look at the margins. Gross margin went from 25.5% in 2019 to an amazing 37.7% in 2024. And operating margin from 11.9% to 22.8% over that same period. These aren't small tweaks. These numbers show a profound fundamental improvement in the business's profitability. What's the biggest takeaway from that margin expansion for investors?
The biggest takeaway is definitely the demonstration of pricing power and operational leverage. You absolutely nailed the most compelling part of Carlisle's financial story, that incredible margin profile. Selling off those lower margin industrial businesses, it really allowed the superior profitability of the building products core to just shine through. We saw the result in 2024. A record-adjusted EBITDA margin of 26.6%. That was a 150 basis point improvement over the year before. That level of profitability. Genuinely best in class in the whole building product sector. It doesn't just look good on paper. It clearly shows the pricing power and the deep operational efficiency that are now baked into this business. Plus, Carlisle consistently acts like a disciplined capital allocator. You see that in their consistently high returns. Their stated goal, and it's ambitious, is to keep return on invested capital, ROIC, above 25%, and they hit it. Reported 28.5% ROIC for 2024. Achieving that, it's a clear hallmark of a business with a strong competitive moat. It means they can reinvest their capital at really attractive rates, creating more value for shareholders with every dollar they put back into the business.
And those high margins, that capital efficiency of the new focus business, it translates directly into something every investor loves, strong, consistent cash flow. In 2024, Carlisle generated an impressive $938 million in free cash flow just from continuing operations, this robust cash generation. It's basically the engine fueling their whole capital allocation strategy. It gives them plenty of capacity, not just for reinvesting back into the business for strategic acquisitions, but also for very significant returns to shareholders. Their long-term target is actually to keep a free cash flow to sales ratio over 15%. It's a strong sign of financial discipline, shows how efficiently they turn revenue into actual cash they can use.
Yeah, Carlisle's management team has shown a very clear, very consistent, and genuinely shareholder-centric approach to using that cash. Their strategy is balanced. They prioritize organic reinvestment, putting money back into the business for future growth. And they do synergistic tuck-in acquisitions that strengthen their core capabilities. But, and this is key, they also very aggressively return excess capital to shareholders through both dividends and, critically, share buybacks. Repurchases especially have become a primary tool. In 2024, they deployed a record $1.6 billion buying back their own shares, using a big chunk of the cash from that CIT sale. And that aggressive stance continued into 2025. $400 million in buybacks in Q1, another $300 million in Q2. They're aiming for $1 billion for the full year. This isn't just returning cash, it's a strategic move. Signals confidence, drives per share value up. Now, dividends. Carlisle has an exceptional track record here. Increased its dividend for 46 consecutive years, nearly half a century of steady increases. That's a testament to long-term commitment, signals stable cash flow. While the current yield is modest, maybe 0.9%, that history of consistent growth.
Highly valued by income investors. Lastly, their M&A strategy. It's definitely shifted. No more big diversifying deals. Now it's smaller, bolt-on acquisitions that strictly strengthen their core building products portfolio. Recent examples, MTL Architectural Metals. Insulation companies like PlastiFab, Thermafoam, Bonded Logic. Small strategic additions. The sheer scale and the timing of these decisions, especially dedicating so much of the divestiture cash to those aggressive buybacks, sends a powerful signal. It shows strong management confidence in the business's future, its intrinsic value, and it highlights their discipline in sticking to that pure play strategy.
Part 6, Growth Trajectory and Vision 2030. The road ahead. Okay, looking forward. Carlyle's long-term growth strategy seems firmly anchored by its alignment with some really durable secular trends. Beyond just the ups and downs of the construction cycle, Carlyle looks incredibly well-positioned to benefit from several powerful long-term tailwinds shaping the industry. First, energy efficiency and sustainability. This is huge, right? Buildings use a ton of energy, produce a lot of carbon emissions, over 30% of global greenhouse gases. That fact alone has led to this massive global push from governments, regulations, and increasingly from companies themselves through ESG initiatives for more energy efficient construction. Carlyle, a direct beneficiary. Their core products, polyiso insulation, those reflective TPO cool roofs, are essential for cutting a building's energy use for heating and cooling. They're not just selling materials, they're selling solutions to big global problems. Second, labor-saving innovation. We touched on this. The construction industry faces this significant structural shortage of skilled labor. It's a persistent problem, not going away fast. This makes products that are faster, simpler, safer to install incredibly valuable to contractors. And Carlyle has made this a central pillar of their R&D. And third, that resilient re-roofing cycle we discussed, that predictable need to replace commercial roofs every 20, 25 years, it provides this large, stable, truly non-discretionary source of demand. It acts as a significant buffer against the volatility you see in new construction markets, almost like a built-in subscription renewal for buildings.
Exactly. And building on those trends, in late 2023, Carlyle unveiled its big Vision 2030 plan, sets out some ambitious financial goals for the end of the decade, using 2023 as the starting point. Let's break down these targets they're aiming for. Adjusted EPS growth at a mid-teen CAGR compound annual growth rate to over $4 per share, keeping ROIC over 25%, organic revenue CAGR over 5%, adjusted EBITDA margin increasing to over 25%, and free cash flow to sales staying above 15%. Now, the feasibility, it hinges on a few key assumptions. That organic revenue growth target of over 5% seems achievable. Maybe even conservative, frankly, given the broader commercial roofing market is projected to grow at 6, 7% CGR. So they could hit that just by holding market share, maybe gain a bit. The targets for ROIC, margins, free cash flow, pretty much continuing their already excellent performance, shows a commitment to maintaining that best-in-class financial profile. However, the most ambitious target, the one that really needs a closer look, is hitting over $40 in adjusted EPS. Getting mid-teen EPS growth from revenue growing mid-single digits, that's a significant mathematical gap.
You can't just grow earnings that much faster than revenue without something else happening. That gap has to be bridged primarily by two things. Continued margin expansion, which, while possible, gets harder at these already high levels, and, crucially, a very significant reduction in the company's share count through buybacks. So while margins are high, the primary driver to actually hit that ambitious $40 plus EPS target has to be aggressive, sustained execution of their share repurchase program. This makes their capital allocation strategy, especially the buybacks, a critical driver of the whole long-term investment case, arguably just as important as the operational performance itself. It highlights that Vision 2030's success isn't just about selling more roofs. It's heavily reliant on financial engineering through shrinking the share count.
Part 7, risk assessment and mitigation, understanding the challenges. Okay, while Carlyle has really strong prospects, and we've talked a lot about this impressive transformation, every business faces risks, no matter how good. As a pure-play building products company now, Carlyle's results are, naturally, tied to the health of the North American construction industry. And we know that industry is cyclical, sensitive to big macro factors, interest rates, GDP growth, corporate spending plans, a significant economic downturn. It would inevitably lead to projects being delayed, maybe canceled. That directly hits demand for Carlyle's products. We actually saw recent evidence of this, right? Those double-digit organic revenue declines in the CWT segment tied to softer residential and commercial markets, a clear, timely reminder of this vulnerability. So how much does that cyclicality really affect their overall resilience now?
That's the key question, isn't it? And the main mitigating factor, and it's a very powerful one, is Carlyle's huge leverage to the re-roofing market. Because replacing a failing roof, it's fundamentally a non-discretionary expense for a building owner. You just can't let a roof leak indefinitely. The damage gets too costly. So this segment of the market is far more resilient, significantly less cyclical than new construction. With re-roofing making up about 70% of their commercial roofing business, Carlyle has this substantial built-in buffer. It helps smooth out earnings, smooth out cash flows through different economic cycles. It means even if new building slows down, a large chunk of their demand stays pretty steady. It's a foundational piece of their resilience that, frankly, many pure-play construction companies just don't have.
Right. Now, as a manufacturer, they also rely heavily on various petroleum-based raw materials, things like MDI, polyol, EPDM, TPO polymer. The prices for these key ingredients, they can be incredibly volatile, subject to global energy markets, chemical supply and demand, all that stuff. A sharp, sustained spike in raw material costs could potentially squeeze their gross margins if they can't pass those costs along to customers quickly enough through price increases. How do they manage that potential volatility?
They tackle this risk using several strategies. First, their sheer size gives them significant buying power and helps them maintain strong, long-term relationships with their suppliers. For most key raw materials, the company smartly keeps relationships with at least two vendors, avoids single-source dependency, builds redundancy into their supply chain, protects them from one supplier having issues. Furthermore, and this is crucial, their strong brand, that compelling value proposition they offer, including those labor-saving aspects we discussed, historically, that's given them significant pricing power. It's allowed them to protect their margins pretty effectively, even during times of high inflation or when raw material costs jumped. They've consistently shown they can command prices that reflect the value they deliver. That's the sign of a strong brand in any industry.
The commercial roofing industry is also highly competitive. We mentioned some big, well-capitalized global players, competitors like GAF, Holcim. They have the scale, the resources to compete hard on price, on innovation. Holcim buying Duralast for over $1 billion clearly shows this dynamic competition, and moves like that could definitely lead to more pricing pressure across the board. Is there a point where Carlisle's moat starts to, you know, erode under that kind of pressure?
Carlisle's main defense here is that powerful ecosystem-based moat we keep coming back to. They're deeply embedded relationships with distributors, and especially with contractors, relationships built over decades of training, support, those loyalty programs. Exceptionally difficult for competitors to just displace. It's not just about selling a product. It's about being integrated into the contractor's business, being the trusted partner. Plus, their ongoing investment in labor-saving innovations products, making contractors' jobs easier, more profitable, helps consistently differentiate what they offer, maintains that premium value proposition, makes it harder for competitors to just win on price alone. While competitive landscapes always change, Carlisle's strategy is designed to create these layers of defense that go way beyond just product features or the lowest price.
Okay, and finally, regulation. As a maker of chemical-based products, Carlisle is subject to a whole range of environmental health safety rules, plus evolving building codes. Any changes there could potentially mean costly product reformulations, big investments in new manufacturing gear, directly hitting their bottom line.
True, but this specific risk also presents a really significant and, I think, compelling opportunity for Carlisle. The secular trend globally is overwhelmingly towards stricter building codes, mandating greater energy efficiency. As a recognized leader in high-performance insulation and energy-efficient roofing membranes, Carlisle is exceptionally well-positioned to directly benefit from these changes. Stricter codes often make lower-performance, less efficient products basically obsolete, which, paradoxically, increases the addressable market for Carlisle's premium high-performance solutions. It raises an interesting question for you, the listener. How often do you actually see a regulatory risk not just mitigated, but actually turned into a profound competitive advantage for a company, like it seems to be doing for Carlisle? It really speaks to their foresight and how well their products align with where things are headed.
Part 8, leadership and governance. The people behind the transformation, leadership quality, always critical for long-term value, right? In Carlisle's case, their management team, led by Chair, President, and CEO D. Christian Koch, they have a demonstrably strong track record. Their biggest achievement, no question, it's the successful conception and, importantly, execution of that massive portfolio transformation. This multi-year process, systematically selling off numerous non-core industrial businesses, then intensely refocusing on building products, was incredibly complex, required huge strategic vision, operational discipline, willingness to make tough calls. The successful sale of CIT in 2024 for that big $2 billion number, that's really the capstone of the whole effort. Unlocked significant value, dramatically simplified the company, and management's capital allocation track record, also commendable. That very deliberate decision to use the bulk of the CIT cash for aggressive share buybacks shows strong belief in the company's own worth, commitment to maximizing per share value. This wasn't just managing, it was truly transformative leadership.
Absolutely. And beyond the exec team, Carlisle maintains a very strong commitment to robust corporate governance practices, diligently overseen by its board of directors. The board itself, comprised of a diverse group, relevant experience in manufacturing, finance, corporate strategy, ensures a broad range of perspectives. Recent actions, like electing James Frias as the new lead independent director, appointing Cheryl Palmer to the board, ensures continuous refreshment of perspectives, diligent oversight, keeps things fresh. Furthermore, their executive compensation programs, specifically designed to closely align management's interests with long-term shareholders. A significant chunk of executive pay is tied to performance metrics, earnings growth, return on capital. Directly incentivizes profitable growth, disciplined capital management, ensures accountability. This strong governance framework provides a solid foundation for continued strategic execution of their ambitious plans. And crucially, it gives shareholders confidence in the long-term stewardship of the company.
Part 9X, valuation framework. What's it worth? Okay, valuation. Determining Carlyle's appropriate value needs a nuanced approach, especially given how much the company has changed. A logical starting point, like with many companies, is comparing its valuation multiples to its public peers in building products. Carlyle currently trades at a trailing PE ratio, price to earnings, of about 15.9 times. That's broadly in line with some peers, like Fortune Brands at 16.4x, but it's actually a significant discount to others, like Armstrong World Industries at 26.8x and Crane at 25.1x. So it's kind of a mixed bag when you just look at the industry comps. What do these comparisons tell us? And maybe more importantly, what don't they tell us about Carlyle's fair value?
Well, they tell us Carlyle is currently priced somewhere in the middle of its pack, right? But they don't fully capture its distinct quality, I'd argue. You can definitely make a strong case that Carlyle deserves to trade at a premium to the broader peer group. Why? Because its operating margins, its returns on invested capital, consistently at the very high end of the whole sector. That superior financial performance genuinely justifies a higher multiple for its inherently higher quality earnings stream, more resilient, more predictable earnings. Furthermore, its business model, with that heavy concentration in the resilient re-roofing market, arguably has a less volatile earnings profile than many peers more exposed to, say, discretionary remodeling or the more cyclical new home construction market. That inherent stability plus superior profitability. In theory, that should command a higher valuation. It's like comparing a high-performance, specialized tool to a general-purpose one. They might both be tools, but their value and capabilities are very different.
Analyzing Carlyle's historical valuation range can offer some clues about how the market viewed them over time. However, given this profound business transformation we've spent all this time detailing, historical multiples might actually have limited use in painting the full picture now. The central valuation question, therefore, isn't just about comparing it to its past self, it's whether the market has fully re-rated the stock. Does the market accurately reflect its new identity as this higher margin, higher return, pure-play building products leader? Or is the market still valuing it, at least partly, like that more complex, lower-margin industrial conglomerate it used to be? It's a really crucial distinction for potential investors.
Precisely. A sustained premium to its historical average multiple could be completely justified by this fundamental improvement in business quality. The company today is simply a different, much better business than it was a decade ago. Clearer mission, optimized financials. This raises an important question for you, the listener. How do you, as an investor or analyst, decide when a company has truly changed enough fundamentally in its business model and financial profile to warrant a completely new valuation lens? Instead of just relying on old patterns, it's about recognizing when the valuation rulebook itself needs an update for that specific company.
Right. And while we're not doing a full discounted cash flow, a DCF analysis right here, the source material highlights several key assumptions that would drive such an analysis. And these are absolutely central to the investment thesis. First, it's normalized earnings power. Using the record earnings of 2024 as a baseline, then thoughtfully adjusting for potential cyclical bumps seems reasonable. Recognizing this new business mix likely means significantly higher trough earnings than in past cycles. The lows shouldn't be as low. Second, long-term growth. That Vision 2030 target of 5% plus annual organic revenue growth seems credible as a long-term assumption, especially backed by the underlying commercial roofing market growth projected at 6-7%, plus those powerful secular tailwinds we keep mentioning. Third, and this is critical, the quality of earnings. Carlyle's high quality of earnings, clearly shown by its strong free cash flow conversion, its ROIC consistently above 25% that directly supports using a low discount rate and assigning a higher terminal value in a DCF model. High quality cash generative businesses typically command higher valuations because their earnings are just more reliable, more predictable, less risky to project out into the future.
So the core debate for investors really boils down to this. Should Carlyle be valued as what we might call a high-quality cyclical company, or maybe a cyclical growth company? There's a difference. A traditional cyclical business usually sees its valuation multiple shrink during economic uncertainty, right? Because earnings are seen as vulnerable. However, Carlyle's significant exposure to that non-cyclical re-roofing market, coupled with those powerful secular growth trends, energy efficiency, labor-saving stuff, might allow it to keep growing revenue and earnings even during modest economic slowdowns. If an investor truly believes these secular drivers are strong enough to largely overcome typical cyclical pressures, well, that would certainly justify a higher, more stable valuation multiple, more like that of a consistent growth company rather than a purely cyclical one. This is where the long-term thesis really comes into focus. It's about whether that growth element overrides the cyclical element.
Oh, true.
Okay, let's bring it all together then. Our deep dive really reveals that Carlyle Companies has truly fundamentally transformed itself into a focused, incredibly high-performing leader in building products. The investment case, as we've explored it, looks compelling, built on a dominant market position, a business model made remarkably resilient by that focus on non-discretionary re-roofing, and a truly durable competitive moat built on relationships and innovation. They boast a superior financial profile, best-in-class margins, great returns, all while pursuing a consistently shareholder-focused capital allocation strategy, and aligning perfectly with those powerful secular tailwinds, energy efficiency, labor-saving solutions. It's quite a story of corporate evolution, really. Proves a company can indeed reinvent itself for a new era.
But, you know, as with any investment, there are important risks to weigh. Always. Despite that big re-roofing focus, the business remains fundamentally tied to the overall health of the non-residential construction market. It's not totally immune to broader economic downturns. It also faces ongoing raw material volatility and an intensifying competitive landscape. Those are factors that always need close monitoring. The transformation mitigated many risks, certainly, but not all of them.
So the ultimate question for you, the listener, isn't really about the quality of the business itself, which is demonstrably high and has improved so much. It's probably more about the appropriate valuation you assign to it. How do you reconcile Carlyle's premium quality, its resilience, with maybe its historical perception as a more cyclical player? Where do you land on that?
Yeah, that raises the important final question for consideration. How much should an investor truly weigh the company's inherent exposure to the cyclical construction industry against its powerful, durable competitive advantages, against its resilient re-roofing business, against its alignment with those significant long-term secular growth trends? The successful execution of their Vision 2030 strategy, particularly their ability to drive that significant EPS growth through that mix of modest organic expansion and substantial aggressive share repurchases that will be the ultimate determinant of long-term shareholder returns. It's a really fascinating balance to strike, thinking about that valuation.
So what does this deep dive lead you to explore next?
Maybe about how companies successfully transform, or how entire industries adapt to new demands, new challenges. We truly hope this has given you a valuable shortcut to being incredibly well-informed on a company that really did reshape its own destiny.